Hi, I'm Graham Spanier, president of Penn State University. And you could greatly enhance your chances of getting a degree by listening to
Radio Free Penn State!
90.7 FM, WKPS.
And I never listen to
Radio Free Penn State!
We want information. Information. Information.
Who are you?
The new number two.
Who is number one?
You are number six.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Welcome back to Radio Free Penn State, the greatest student public affairs show on earth. Broadcast out of an underground bunker in the hub here at Penn State University. I'm Andy, your friend, the neighborhood and I'm here with you. Today is the one and only Mr. Chris Miller.
The one and only.
I mean, there are other Chris Millers.
Actually, there's a lot of other Chris Millers at Penn State.
Well, you're the one and only on Radio Free Penn State. Thank you. Every radio show needs a Chris Miller. Also joining us on the show is Ms. Jen Myers, super senior in political science.
I think there's only one other Jen Myers. So.
But you're the only one on Radio Free Penn
exactly.
State.
Exactly. I'm one of two.
That's right. And last but not least, we have our returning guest from earlier this afternoon on the line 90.7. We have Ms. Beryl Healy joining us on Radio Free Penn State this afternoon, this evening. Hello, Beryl.
Hi, how are you?
Great to have you on the show. I hope all of our listeners caught you earlier on the airwaves of the line when you were talking about The Who and the Beatles, being that you're a native of Liverpool, England, and you were growing up in the early 1960s, and you knew on a first-person basis, you knew everybody from The Who, the Beatles, you met the Stones, and all those legendary rock bands from the so-called British Invasion.
All the guys back then that didn't know how famous and how good they were going to be in the future.
That's right. We're glad to have you on Radio Free Penn State, and the reason we're bringing Miss Healy back onto the airwaves of the line for Radio Free is because she's also been heavily involved all over the place, particularly in Miami Beach, as a production manager for what was Miami Beach's largest nightclub, big-time promoter, event manager, and also she was a tour coordinator for The Who back in the day. And has lots and lots of experience in dealing with bars, clubs, nightclubs, and youth entertainment involving alcohol, the never-ending topic of discussion on Radio Free Penn State. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And she's also a former member of the Community and Campus Partnership Against Dangerous Drinking here in State College. And I'd like to just start our discussion today with that in particular. You sat on the Campus Community Partnership Against Dangerous Drinking for, what, 2 years?
3 years altogether.
3 years. In a nutshell, tell us what exactly that is and why you're no longer a member.
The partnership was brought together to basically try to bridge the gap between the community and the student body. It was seen that there was this gap between the two. It was always us and them. And the partnership sort of came together to try to bridge that gap, having members both from the student body, from the faculty, from alums, and also from the community. I was invited onto the partnership because of my experience in dealing with nightclubs and bars and basically students. In Miami Beach, we've got four colleges there, as well as the community colleges. And, of course, it was always, you know, a big spot for spring break, so I think we dealt with mostly every kind of student, race, color, creed, age, and, you know, we dealt with it. So that experience was supposed to bring a lot to the table to sort of, you know, deal with the riots, and I use the term loosely because I thought that was hilarious when they classified this as a riot.
The ones up here in State College?
Yes, because we'd recently, before that, we'd had riots in Little Haiti in Miami in Super Bowl when a policeman got shot. So there were real riots where buildings burned and cars were overturned. And I mean, they literally burned four blocks of the city. That's a riot. And
it sure is.
I thought it was so amusing when that they're classifying it as a riot, and you're watching the news clips and cars are driving through the middle of a riot. It's like, whoa! You know, I mean, the first
so
thing
it's a
in Liverpool
riot.
Was in Miami was, you know, cordon off everything, and nothing was allowed in or out, and you certainly wouldn't want to drive your car through the middle of a riot, you know, because there's bricks and bottles and all kinds of things flying and bullets and. There it is on the news, a couple of students climbing a lamppost, celebrating, and cars driving past. That's a riot. I'm sorry.
This was in Miami Beach that you're talking about, right?
Yes.
And when did you come to State College?
1999.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was after the first so-called riot here in State College.
Yeah, which I thought was kind of, you know, that's a riot.
But then
disturbance,
yes. You were here when we had the 2000 riot. If you want to call it that. And then, of course, the even lesser riot, the basketball riot of March of 2001. Those were the three, 98 Arts Fest, 2000 Arts Fest, and Spring Break, or Circa Spring Break, March of 2001, downtown Beaver Canyon area. Each of them respectively decreasing in their intensity, their riot intensity, if you will. And of course, coming from Liverpool, England, you're also far more familiar with soccer riots and things of that
They're
nature.
They're real riots. I mean, where they tear down a stadium, you know.
Not just the goalpost, but the actual stadium, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing that's sort of a bit embarrassing about being British, the soccer hooligans. The one and only claim to any sports fame, I think.
So talk a little bit about the partnership here against dangerous drinking, because, of course, as you know, the riots and any other such disturbances, whether they are done by committed by a mob or whether it's an individual, they're all, quote-unquote, alcohol-fueled. And in the minds of many borough councilmen and local community officials, they're typically regarded as alcohol-caused, even if they don't necessarily say alcohol-caused. So give us your perspective, having sat on the partnership against dangerous drinking vis-a-vis these incidents that took place here in the last several years.
Okay, well, my approach was, you know, why it happened. And I said one of the worst things you can do is turn out a few thousand people onto the streets at the same time when they're obviously not ready to go home. It's a recipe for disaster. We learned that on the beach, that, you know, to turn out 2,000 or 3,000 people from various venues at the same time, especially, you know, when it's a nice evening, they're not ready to go home. They've still got a lot of energy to burn off, and that was probably one of the worst things, you know, that bar owners did. And I said it would have been rather cool to allow some of the bars an extension on their hours to allow people to stay longer so that people drift home instead of all out together. And it was like, well, that's a bit radical, you know, letting people drink longer. I said, no, I didn't say they could drink longer, just let the bars stay open longer so that people don't have to leave, you know, at the same time. We saw a tremendous amount of problems with students on the beach. And it was sort of bringing that knowledge to the table to say, hey, I've seen this before. You know, this is how we dealt with it. And it worked. Okay, it may not be the perfect solution, but it made things better. You know, you're never going to have the perfect solution. You're always going to have somebody that doesn't agree with you. But this was something that worked. And the first thing we did was, you know, we extended drinking hours. We made it so that people didn't have to leave at 2:00. They could leave when they were ready. Because we found if people go out at 12, they're going to consume a certain amount of alcohol. Consume it over a longer period of time is better than trying to drink it all in a couple of hours. We also found that if we allowed underage students to go into a bar with those who were over 21, their peers taught them how to drink. They taught them how to handle saying no. They taught them, you know, to recognize those levels of, hey, this is a nice buzz I've got right now, but if I have another drink, I'm going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw that, and we saw, you know, what happens when students get drunk and start falling off balconies and things like that. So, you know, we had to stop that. You know, I mean, that's, you know, the first thing that we had to do, but you can't just sit back and say, no drinking. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. You have to approach it with a different attitude to say, if we're not going to stop it, which obviously we're not, then how do we make things better, you know, so that students can drink if they want to and be safe at the same time. And it's not just students, you know, I mean, it's over 21s too.
So this is, you're speaking to a practical drinking culture of sorts.
Well, it's interesting that Pennsylvania is or was the largest beer drinking state in America. So, I mean, I thought, well, you know, you're right in the heart of Pennsylvania and you're complaining about drinking. But the attitude was they wanted to stop it, but they weren't offering any alternatives. I mean, I mentioned, okay, what happens if you have a 21-year-old guy who has a 19-year-old girlfriend? Where are they supposed to go on a Saturday night? And I go, they can go to the movies. No, movies is traditionally a night out during the week, and it's only 2 hours, and you sit there anyway. Where do you go to actually burn some energy and have fun? Well, there's lots of places where, you know, an 18-year-old can go. Didn't name one. Well, McDonald's is open till 2.
They said that on this partnership.
I said, no, 8-year-olds, let alone 18-year-olds, who won't go to McDonald's. I mean, come on, you're talking about adults here. They're not kids, they're adults. They need somewhere to go. And it's obvious by what's happening, they're going to parties, but they're going to parties in apartments and in frat houses and in places where it wasn't designed to have parties. You don't have security there. You don't have safe places. It's not designed for that purpose. So you've got problems. And the small bars that you have in State College can't handle that influx of people coming in. So what happens is they're excited. The energy levels are high. It's like at a concert or a good football game. Remember those? And, you know, people come out and they've still got that energy. The adrenaline's still pumping. And you need to be able to offer an alternative. Don't just sit there and say, no drinking, no bars, no liquor. It's not going to work. You've got to offer something else. And I kept hitting these brick walls. I mean, we offered to bring a dance club into the area. We got the financing. We got everything set up. We got the backing. And we were told, well, you know, you can't do it because there'll be riots. And I said, oh, but you don't understand. This is going to be liquor-free. We're not going to serve alcohol. So therefore, we'll be able to stay open until 4, 5 in the morning.
So in all ages?
It would be 18 and over.
18 and over,
yeah, because,
nightclub.
Yeah, it would be 18 and over because under 18, you know, you do tend to have some issues there.
Right.
So they said, oh, well, no, it's not when people are leaving. That's not when we're going to have the riots. You're going to have riots with people trying to get in. You're going to have so many people who want to go that we won't be able to handle it on the street.
Well, isn't that a compliment to you? Because they're already assuming that there's going to be so many people waiting in line in mass to try to get into your club. They're assuming it's going to be so successful.
But they can't handle the riots. It was
right.
The same with when the students did Afterfest. They did the first concert for Afterfest.
That was the alternative to the Arts Fest. After we had the two Arts Fest riots,
exactly.
We've had Afterfest for the last few years now on the Hub Lawn, where we had a band, a giant stage set up, and that was the alternative to the late night hours when the bars let out. There would be a headlining act on the Hub Lawn,
exactly.
2 a.m. So instead of rioting in Beaver Canyon, you go to the Hub Lawn and chill out with a band.
Exactly, and it was a huge success. It was a huge success. The report that we had after that at the partnership, Tom King had said that there was no trouble. He'd anticipated trouble, but there wasn't any trouble. Everybody had come out of the bars and they'd all started to make their way up to that party, and he was very, very impressed with the way it went down. What really disgusted me was that a member of the partnership turned to the students that organized it, and I thought they did a tremendous job, and he said, I don't ever want to see 2,000 students on the lawn again. Tone it down for next year. Tone it down. Something that was so successful should have been, okay, how can we make this bigger? Let's move it into the Bryce Jordan. Let's really make it a tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Make it a tradition. But instead of, you know, saying, great, yeah, this is wonderful, if there were no problems, let's tone it down. Let's have fewer people going. I thought, what's the point? You deserve everything you get. I mean, that was sort of a turning point when it was like,
mm-hmm.
You know, this is a waste of energy. It's a waste of time. You're going to get nowhere fast.
Right. So I'm not going to ask you to name names, but this person who sits on the partnership, I guess, is a Penn State administrator, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Doesn't surprise me the least. There really seems to be a culture of mediocrity, if you will, among many of these type of people who either sit either in the borough or on the university side of the fence making these decisions, who are brainstorming for these alternatives for alcohol. They're looking for ways to bring about the nice quieting, if you will, the type of outcome that they want without paying any attention or any mind to, as you say, the students who are looking to burn off some energy. And when you're having an event like an arts fest and everyone comes into town, students, friends, alumni, they come into town because they're expecting a big event type of weekend. Even if there isn't necessarily an event to pinpoint, like a football game, there's still nonetheless this idea, this event mentality. We're here to really let it all hang loose, you know, on the Saturday night of Arts Fest weekend. And they come in, and then, of course, those events like the Hublon After Fest serve as that culminating pinnacle, right? And then they're not allowed to do that because, like you said, some of these folks want to, quote-unquote, tone it down. So where is everybody supposed to go? Doesn't that spill everyone back into the street where you had the original problem in the first place?
Absolutely. I mean, one of my first things was, if you're not going to let students go to drink, you've got to let them go somewhere. And you've got to treat them as being adults and giving them something that they enjoy. Students enjoy music, they enjoy dancing, they enjoy that kind of atmosphere. And it's common that you always want to be at the biggest party.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the way it was in my day, too. It's the same thing. You always want to be at the biggest party. And yes, events now have taken on weekends. It used to be that you'd go to a concert. But now, when you're organizing events like that, you don't just organize the concert. You organize something the day before, then the day of the concert, and then you want something afterwards so that it doesn't just end and people are left hanging with, okay, now what do I do? There's that wind down, and that's why good events are always organized with that, you know, with the events leading up to the main event and then the wind down afterwards, because that's how you stop a lot of the problems. You know, you allow people to leave the area, you know, whether it's a town or a city or a park or a concert, you know, without all these people going out there at the same time.
What do we do, though, with these alcohol problems? Because, I mean, typically the way they've been addressed is binge drinking. As you know, that's been Graham Spanier's drumbeat since he got here, citing the original Harvard study of binge drinking, which was somehow loosely, more or less loosely defined as four drinks or more per sitting for men, and I believe five or more for women. And, of course, they don't define the metric of what a sitting is. But nonetheless, they loosely define binge drinking as such, and that means that most people, in reality, who will go out to drink on a Saturday or a Friday night or any night of the week, who do in fact kick back four or more beers or shots or what have you, by that definition are in fact binge drinking. So what does this mean for state colleges? Everyone in danger when they go out and they're 99% of the people are otherwise in control of themselves, even though they've had more than four drinks? Do we need to change the definition, or where's the real problem?
Well, luckily, when students sort of go outside past the mountains and they realize the real world out there, that they discover that binge drinking isn't necessarily that, and that definition is wrong. I mean, having four or five drinks in one sitting, it doesn't specify what you're drinking or how much. I mean, if you're mixing your own rum and coke and it's going to be 80% rum to, you know, to 20% coke, or is it going to be 50-50? Or, I mean, there's so many variables. Plus, other factors come into play. I mean, your body weight, if you've eaten. I mean, if you're dancing, I mean, you can drink and dance all night and you just won't get drunk. I mean, because your body metabolism is running so fast, you don't have time to. There are so many different factors, and this is sort of why you can't just lay these laws down and say, well, this is it. There's so many variables to it. And drinking is part of life. I mean, there are so many studies that say having one beer or one glass of wine a day cuts your cholesterol. It's actually good for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I raised that at one partnership meeting, and you wouldn't believe.
What was the response?
They almost all swallowed their tongues. It was like, ugh.
I can't believe she said that.
I mean, to me, the partnership they were extremely good at collecting stats and figures and statistics. And yes, we know students die, and it's wrong. It really is wrong. But you can't just sit there and quote figures all the time and spend all this time and energy collecting data, which, to be honest, percentage-wise, is the same now as it was when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't changed. That should say something in itself. What you have to do is you look at how it's being handled. And I pointed out the differences between, or the similarities between State College and other college towns, in particular sort of Boston, which is a huge party central, and Austin, Texas. And, you know, both of those areas had problems, as did Miami. And we didn't beat them by saying, okay, we're going to close all the liquor stores, we're going to close all the bottle shops, nobody's going to have parties. You know, we took the parties from the dorms and from private houses and put them into areas that were designed for parties. Areas, you know, where you could let a lot of people come together and have fun in a safe environment and where you could monitor what was going on. And we did it really easily. We would take people's car keys off them. We would take their driver's license off them. And when they were leaving, if we thought they were drunk, they didn't get it back. It's really easy. And if anybody had a problem with giving us their car keys or giving us their driver's license, guess what? They didn't get in. You know, it's not hard. It really isn't.
Well, here in State College, that's sort of not necessarily applicable because so many people are just walking to their local bar, although with the suburban sprawl that we have here, more and more people are living in Patton Township and outside the area, thanks to the borough's insane ordinances. Maybe more and more people will be driving to the bar, I don't know. But it seems like you have a mob mentality. You're right in that a lot of them don't know how to drink. They're not learning it. They're not being brought up with it. And they go to the bar, and then they don't care as long as you stumble out of there without looking like you're causing too much of a problem. But then when you're dealing with the mob on the street, there's that critical mass, to use that phrase, and then they're all on the street, and what do you do? And this goes back to the borough council saying alcohol fueled this, alcohol fueled that. And I shouldn't say the borough council only, it's the university. A lot of the folks that sit on this partnership that you were a part of for 3 years, and you know the mentality, it's the same idea. Mm-hmm. Everything's alcohol fueled, and then they're going after, they're looking to curb the consumption and the frequency of the alcohol, and then they're looking to disperse the crowd. So where are they going wrong in the particulars of how they're trying to offset the problems or the outcomes, or do they just have a fundamental mentality that's just wrong from the beginning?
I think it's a bit of both, because the mentality is wrong, you know, or it's alcohol-fueled. And you say, okay, well, if Penn State have a good game, they're celebrating, it's alcohol-fueled.
Mm-hmm.
If they lose, people drink to drown their sorrows, it's alcohol-fueled. So, you know, get over that. It's a fact, and people are going to drink. I mean, when people go out to celebrate, they drink. The problem I saw was that they're not willing to change the way to address it. And a lot of parents are to blame. I mean, when I was growing up, and still in England, you can go into a bar underage, you just can't drink liquor. And if you're around something, you become tolerant of it. It's not the forbidden fruit, you know, and like, oh, you know, now I'm old enough, I can have it. But it's also, I think it's a lack of education. I mean, I taught a lot of students, we used to call it the hug and mug, which was how to get car keys off somebody. If you're at a private party...
Hug and mug.
Yeah, that's what it was. I don't think I actually christened it. I think it was one of the girls that christened it. But, I mean, if somebody's drinking and you know they're driving, you've got to get the car keys off them, and it's your responsibility. And I've seen it happen so many times where friends are out, in particular girls, and one of them will have had too much to drink, and they're too scared or they don't know how to ask for help. Hey, she's had too much to drink. And one of our policies was a no questions asked. You come and say, hey, my friend's had too much to drink, or I think she's in trouble, or he's in trouble. We did not judge. We didn't criticize. We helped. It was not, you know, we weren't there to judge. And students found that they could trust us, and they knew we weren't going to be judgmental. We weren't going to say, oh, you know, 3 points for this or whatever. It was, okay, you learn by this mistake. Afterwards, once we knew they were safe, and, you know, they'd learned the lesson, then we'd get in touch with them and talk to them about it and make sure, you know, that it didn't happen again. But it was that, first of all, that policy, because we've seen it happen so many times where, you know, people are in danger of dying. I mean, alcohol poisoning it killed Keith Moon. Let's face it, he died from alcohol poisoning. And he had everything going for him. But he was a chronic drunk. And it killed him in the end. I recollect a girl in Miami. She was 21. She was out with her friends. And the security came to the booth and asked me to go to the bathroom and said, you know, there's a lady in the bathroom and she's having problems. I went to her. She was totally disoriented. She didn't know where she was. She didn't know who she was. And I could just tell by looking at her, it wasn't drugs. When you've been around both, you can tell the difference between alcohol and drugs. Her friends were with her, and I said, what's she been drinking? Oh, not much. And I got hold of one of them, and I pinned her up against the wall, and I said, don't lie to me. You tell me what she's been drinking, or you're both in trouble. She's had 2 bottles of tequila. She must have weighed 98 pounds soaking wet. I mean, she was so slim, and I said, okay, that's way too much, okay. I told security, carry her downstairs, call 911. The girls were still adamant that she's going to be okay, she's going to be okay. I said, how do I get in touch with her parents? Oh, her parents are out of the country. I don't care if they're on another planet, I need to get in touch with them. Obviously, if they're out of the country, there's still some way to get in touch with them. Well, we don't know. Because we had the authority to be able to do it, we took their bags, went through their bags, and we found out phone numbers, and we got in touch with parents, and we found. But she was literally this close to die. Because her friends didn't have the guts or the mentality, or they didn't even know how to come and ask for help. And that's the first thing you've got to get across. You've got to start, you know, letting people know, hey, it's okay, you know, if you get drunk, as long as you get help. You know, and don't try to cover it up. And friends, yeah, that ad, friends, don't let friends drive drunk. It's true. A guy died in Belfont a couple of years ago. He left a private party and drove his car into a building, demolished the building, and killed himself. And it was pretty close to where I live. One of the girls that was at the scene was crying and telling me how, you know, he was her best friend and he'd left the party because he was upset and angry and he'd been drinking and they'd been friends for years. And I said, oh, yeah, you were such good friends, but you didn't take his keys off him. And she looked at me and she said, he didn't let me. I said, no, you didn't know how to do it, right? And she said, well, yeah, how do you do it? I said, nobody's ever taught you. And I said, you bring your friends after the funeral and we'll meet and I'll show you how to do it. I said, it's something so simple and yet it works. Good enough, she met me after the funeral, a couple of weeks after the funeral, and I taught them how to do it. I said, it's really simple, you know what I mean? And we sort of went through this of how to get the keys off somebody who, you know, is being belligerent and won't hand them over and, you know, they're going to drive. A couple of months after that, I met her in Giant and she said to me, she said, you know, you saved a life. I said, what do you mean I saved a life? She said, we were at a party a couple of weeks ago. She said, and one of the guys there wanted to drive to go and get his girlfriend. And she said, he was too drunk. She said, I got the keys off him. She said, and I did it the way you tell me. And she was so pleased. It was like, great. If one person, you know, it helps. Now she's going to tell everybody else. And that's how it works. You know, it's education. You know, it's teaching people how to drink. It's teaching people how they recognize when they're reaching a limit, how to, you know, mix drinks, how to watch what's being put in your drink, mm-hmm. how to say no. You know?
Well, you know, this is interesting because it seems as though that there's a certain absolutist mentality and an absolutist approach of complete abstention from alcohol up until the age of 21 because it's supposed to be illegal, so you're technically not supposed to drink before you're 21. University would, for all of the kangaroo programs that we have here at Penn State, everything from learning how to put a condom on a dildo, or we were just interviewing some people about that the other day, all of these other preventative measures and safety tips and everything else, when it comes to alcohol, there's no such, at least to my knowledge anyway, someone correct me if I'm wrong, 865-9577, give us a call. There is no such program that's going to tell you how to do any of the things that you just described, whether it involves alcohol or not, but even with respect to alcohol, how to pour the drink, how to look after yourself, how to look and see. How do you come to the point where you learn to know when enough is enough? Everyone's learning on their own, trial and error, through their own personal experience. And fine, But then let's not be surprised when, you know, we crack some eggs and some people end up stumbling home on their face. And if that's what we want to stop, then you can either proactively prevent that by teaching these things that you're talking about, or you leave the kids alone. But instead of cracking down on them and throwing them in the slammer, you know, they're trying to broach the situation from the top rather than from the bottom.
Exactly. I mean, we used to do 18 to party, 21 to drink. And we found that peers, you know, taught you how, you know, I mean, we'd walk around the club and you'd hear them saying, no, I think you've had enough. Well, no, I haven't. Well, yeah, you have, because you're slurring your speech.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, okay. And you'd find older brothers would be with younger brothers and sisters. And it was a learning process. And it was the same as when you first go to a concert and you go with an older friend, you learn how to behave at a concert. When you go anywhere, when you go for dinner, when you go to a seminar, you learn how to behave by watching others and by interacting with others. It seems when it comes to drinking, especially here in America, it's like you have no contact with it at all, and then all of a sudden you're thrown in the deep end, and you wonder why you can't swim.
Right.
And that is wrong. In England, you're sort of exposed to it at an early age because it's part of life. I mean, it's part of celebrations and any kind of family get-together. You know, children are given a shandy, which is beer and lemonade mix, you know, or a very, very weak rum and coke, you know, because rum's good for you. So you kind of have this mentality. And in fact, in France, children there, the age of 4 and 5, are drinking wine, whereas they're not allowed to drink coffee until they're 13 or 14, because coffee's not good for you. Wine, on the other hand, is good for you. So you have these children, and you never hear of issues of drunkenness in those countries because the children are brought up with it. And if you're brought up with it, you get used to it. It's human nature that if you can't have something, you want it. You know, it's that kind of mentality that, you know, if it's prohibited, well, why? It must be super exciting. But if it's something that's, you know, run-of-the-mill, it's like, yeah, okay, I can take it or leave it. I mean, with my own son, you know, he's going to drink. Everybody's going to try it. It's better for him to try it in my house when I'm around and I can see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
But that's a society.
I got him drunk once so that he knew what it was about.
That's a societal thing.
He knew what it was about. So, he knows what it feels like to go to that point, and he knows it's his responsibility. You know, nobody else's. You know, I'm not his keeper. But if you don't go through that experience, how do you know? It's like when you're in a car driving in the snow and you lose it on the ice. How do you know what to do? Either somebody teaches you, right? Or you screw up 4 or 5 times before you get it right.
Right, just hopefully you don't die along with your passengers.
The thing is, when you screw up with alcohol, you know, it's a bigger issue. You know, so, I mean, it's education. And I think we've got to get away from this, you know, total abstinence to saying, okay, if you're going to do it, let's teach you how to do it. It's the same with sex and with AIDS.
I was just about to ask you that. Is it the same with sex? Because it seems like, on the one hand, you encourage people to practice, you know, with the condom usage and everything else.
Because you know they're going to do it. That's why.
Right. I understand the argument. Right. But then on the other hand, with respect to alcohol, it's not totally analogous because it's illegal. So the logic would be that the law would have to change to allow for these controlled environment type of situations in which we, like you said, you know, if you're under supervision and you're underage and in the home of a parent or guardian, you can legally practice a moderate amount of alcohol consumption, not binge drinking.
Exactly.
As defined by Graham Spanier. And so you would, in order for people to acclimate them and culturate them into moderate drinking and sensible drinking and casual social drinking rather than the crazy binge. But you're not allowed to practice that. It is illegal for a parent, your culture be damned, to serve your kid a glass of wine at dinner, even if it's only 2 ounces. It's illegal.
It's ridiculous. And yet in Europe, it's such a different mentality, and it's a different culture too. I mean, I think it's ridiculous in this country that you're old enough to fight for your country, you're old enough to get married, you're old enough to have kids, but you're not old enough to drink. And one of the classic examples of that is BYU. I mean, BYU is a dry campus. But listen to any game, any football game or basketball or anything coming out of BYU, and you hear, you know, the quarterback, you know, he's 19 years old, married with two kids. And so-and-so, the running back, he's married, has three children. He's like, okay, if they're not drinking, they're, you know what they're doing. I mean, they're getting around it by saying, okay, I can't have sex with, you know, somebody that's not my spouse, so I'll get married. I mean, look at just look at it. It's obvious. And going dry and banning it is not the way to go. And in fact, in Europe now, they've now extended, you know, it used to be 10:30 for, you know, the last call, 10:30, and you had to be out of the pub by 11. They've now extended drinking hours to 24 hours because they have realized they were beginning to have the same kind of problems that when you let a lot of people out into the street, or you put them out in the street, particularly in the summer when the evenings are very pleasant, they're not ready to go home. They're not tired, and that was something we found. If we stayed open until the early hours, they're so tired, you know, they drag themselves home and they sleep till 3 o'clock next afternoon and, you know, had a great weekend. And people, you ask people, and that's why when we did our surveys, you know, we said, you know, what do you equate to being a great weekend? And it's usually ones that you're exhausted afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, physically, mentally, emotionally. That's a great weekend.
That's a blast.
That's a blast. And when you're going out at 12, and I mean, one of the borough members even said, well, if somebody's going out at 12 o'clock, they're up to no good. It's like, this is 2003, you know, or 2000, yeah, it was last year. Come on, you know, students today, don't go out. They're on a different clock. And I think that there was only two members of the faculty there that were said, yes, you know, I agree with you, students are on a different time clock. You know, they sleep from 6 till 8, then they eat at 9, sleep from 10 till 12, and then go out. You say, yeah, that's what we did in my, you know, that's what we did too. You can nap. And that's social norm. And, it, you know, just if you don't like it, then build a bridge and get over it, because that's the way it is, and deal with it. And you've got to find a solution. So you're not going to stop it. The prohibition didn't work before. It's certainly not going to work now.
Right.
You know, Sunday opening. I mean, to me, that makes perfect sense, because if you think about it, if you can only buy beer on a Saturday, you're going to buy some for Sunday anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you buy it, well, I may need it. Now, if it's sitting there in your fridge on Sunday and you open the door, oh, it's there, I'm going to drink it. If it wasn't there and you knew you could go get it, then you're not going to buy it on Saturday. And guess what? On Sunday, if you don't feel like a drink, you're not going to go buy it anyway. If you do, you go buy it.
What do you think of the recent bill that's been approved to expand Sunday liquor beer sales? There was just an Associated Press story in the Collegian from last Wednesday, November 10th, in which it said the number of places to buy alcohol on Sunday in Pennsylvania could multiply with more state liquor stores allowed to sell wine and spirits, and distributors allowed to sell kegs and cases of beer under a bill that was approved by a Senate committee on Tuesday, November 9th. This is the bill was approved 8-2 by the Senate Law and Justice Committee over the protests of tavern owners who fear that Sunday beer sales by distributors would damage their businesses. I'll let you respond before I even read any more of this article.
I think it's a great thing. I think that convenience stores and the grocery stores should be allowed to sell six packs too. I mean, there is one senator, I forget his name, but I noticed in the press last week, he is pushing to bring Pennsylvania's liquor laws up to date.
Senator Jake Corman, Republican of Center County, said, I don't think making beer available more than it already is would be a constructive way to solve binge drinking, presumably.
I mean, it is so stupid to think, oh, if you close the stores on Sundays, there's going to be no binge drinking. Duh, you can go buy it on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and stockpile it for the weekend. I mean...
And does that lead to more binging?
Absolutely, because... Okay, in England, we had liquor stores where you would go to buy liquor, or you could go to a bar or a pub and buy it. The liquor stores were only open for a couple of hours on a Sunday. So what we would do on Saturday is go buy and say, well, you know, we may have friends over tomorrow, I'll get an extra case of this or a couple of bottles of that. When we came to Miami, I noticed that because you can get it 24, it's like, well, I'm not going to buy that extra bottle. And then when friends come over, it's, hey, do you feel like a drink? Well, yes. Or if they say no, you don't go buy it. Whereas if it's there, you drink it. To me, because you know you can't get it on a certain day, you're going to buy extra the day before. And then because it's sitting there, you're going to drink it. So we noticed from personally that by being able to go and buy it whenever you wanted to, you didn't have to stockpile it. You didn't have to sort of, you know, have it in the house all the time.
865 WKPS 865-9577. If anyone has any questions or comment that they'd like to make, or any questions to ask Ms. Beryl Healy, former member of the Campus Community Partnership Against Dangerous Drinking, here on the show today, give us a call. Chris, you had a question.
Well, yeah, actually, I was going to observe that the other problem I think we have right now in State College that I think Sunday beer distributor sales would help solve is, you know, this pilot program that the state has where they allow a certain number of liquor stores to be open on Sunday. You know, the State College liquor store is one of those. So right now, if you're sitting in State College and, you know, you want to go and get something to drink on a Sunday, you can either go and pay the exorbitant six-pack shop prices, or you can go and get hard liquor instead of beer if you want to sit and drink. And people, you know, just end up buying hard liquor and drinking it instead of beer.
That's true. But also, if you look at sort of figures now, beer sales have gone down, whereas liquor sales have gone up. And I don't think that's anything to do with the hours stores are opening or accessibility. I think it's because people are becoming more sophisticated in their taste. Ladies, I know for a fact, would much prefer their date to be drinking a cocktail rather than holding a bottle of beer. You know, it's just that that's just the way it is. And, I mean, I think the guys are cottoning on to this. You know, and whereas walking around, you know, with a bottle of beer and slapping it all over the place is not the ideal way to turn the girls on. It really isn't. You know, trust me. And let's face it, bottom line, why do people go out to bars and clubs in the first place? You know, a few go out to get drunk, but mostly they're going out to meet that special someone. You know, I mean, that's what they're going out for. And girls really don't like it when guys are slapping beer all over the place. And they like to be in a more sophisticated environment. I'm not talking stuffed shirts, but just something, you know, a little bit more trendy, a little bit more modern. Mm-hmm. And this whole image is changing. Pennsylvania is getting more sophisticated. Yeah, you still have your rural areas. But at the same time, there's more technology here, and people are having, you know, more choices for where they can go to party and how they can spend their money. And as far as the tavern owners being, you know, against the distributors looking at their business, the tavern owners could really do a lot more to control, you know, the situation. I know that players do a teen night, but look at what night they do it.
During the week.
I mean, how pathetic is that? How infantile?
Well, they're not going to risk losing all the money from the liquor sales on the weekend.
Exactly, and that was why we said, you know what, there's a real opportunity here to do an adult-style nightclub, dance club.
Which is what you wanted to do.
Which is what we wanted to do. I mean, you can serve non-alcoholic beers. And when I suggested that, it was like, well, it's still beer. No, it's not.
You can
go into a grocery store in State College and buy non-alcoholic beer. I mean, it's right in the drink mix aisle at Wegmans.
Exactly. I mean, if you think about it, Disney doesn't serve liquor. And how many people say, well, I'm not going to Disney World because I can't get a drink?
Only in France.
It's that kind of, you know, mentality that, first of all, I really don't believe that sort of drink is the driving force behind people going out socializing. You know, a lot of people go to a lot of places where there is alcohol and they maybe have one drink because they're having fun. When you go to a concert, you know, you have a lot of fun. You're not drinking. You maybe have a drink before you go. And if, you know, if the concert ends early enough, you can have a drink when you leave. But it's this whole, you know, view of it. And you've actually got to be in it and work with it on a daily basis and work on both sides of the bar. You know, in other words, be serving it. Seeing, you know, the business from a business point of view, because let's face it, you're in it to make money. At the same time, you have a certain amount of responsibility to your, you know, to your customers or your guests, as well as to yourself. But also, you're on the other side and saying, okay, what do I get for my money when I go out? What's the entertainment factor? And to be honest with you, when students come to State College, what is there for them to do?
Nothing.
Drink and study.
Pretty much.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Now, Boston sort of got on the ball. And I mean, the guys that own Avalon talked to us a lot in Miami about, you know, the way to do it. And now, I mean, it's becoming a tourist attraction because people go there for the nightlife. And okay, the borough are now talking about, yeah, they want professionals living and working here, which, yeah, that's the perfect scenario because that increases your tax base. You don't want people coming and then leaving. You know, you want them to stay here and put some of that money and that education back into the area. But to do that, people want nightlife. And if you look at everywhere that's emerged from the ashes, I mean, South Beach, a perfect example. Perfect example. You've got to have the nightlife there. And nightlife means alcohol. You know, especially for your professionals. Guess what? They're over 21. And guess what? They want to drink. And, I mean, I raised an issue at one of the partnership meetings when I said, you know, you're talking about alcohol as if it was illegal. Alcohol is legal, but, you know, for you to drink over 21. Drugs, on the other hand, no matter what age you are, is illegal. And you have a bigger drug problem here in State College than you do with alcohol. But you all want to bury your head in the sand and ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, anybody can walk on campus and buy hard drugs. I'm talking hard drugs. You know, not just weed. I'm talking opium. I mean, I'm talking hard stuff. And you're burying your heads in the sand. And that is wrong. And I said, you know, you have to remember that, you know, a glass of liquor is legal. And one of the partnership turned to me and said, and some of us, you know, wish it wasn't.
That's all they can say.
I misquote. Some of us think it is.
Some of us think it is?
That it absolutely
That they think that alcohol is illegal.
Absolutely.
They want it to be illegal so bad that they think it is and they're just going to proceed with their...
One of them was instrumental in getting the drinking age changed.
Back when it was changed. Oh, I see. That's ridiculous.
I mean,
look, well, they would fire back by saying, look, you don't have riots from hard drugs.
Excuse me. Yes, you do. Have you been there and lived it?
In Miami? No.
You have riots for drugs because people get so frenzied that they have to have them. They literally go out of control.
But that's because it's illegal. And so there's an underground, right, drug war and all that. Okay. Just real quick before I run to a break, what is the designated purpose of the Partnership Against Dangerous Drinking? Like, what is it supposed to do? Is it just an advisory committee for borough council and university, or what exactly is it?
What they're supposed to be doing is taking the stance of educating, okay, and also sort of bringing the two together so that the community, because they feel the community suffers, which is true, you know, and I mean, you sort of, you know, walk through town and you really don't want to see, you know, the bad effects of alcohol. But that they're united. In other words, it's not just the college students or the campus that are saying, hey, we want to stop binge drinking, but also the community as well. And my take on it is that the community really don't care.
Don't care about what?
They don't care about the partnership.
Oh, I see.
You know, the partnership are doing their best. It's supposed to be this collaboration. For instance, the partnership arranged for some of the students from the frats to go to the training courses that PLCB held so that when they were having parties in the frats, they would actually know how to serve liquor. And, you know, we thought, well, yeah, that's a good idea. But then there's no follow-up afterwards. You know, it's a case of, well, what did that accomplish? And I sort of shook my head and I said, well, first of all, how many people in the frats that are over 21 are actually at the parties at the frats? Because we know from the frats in Miami when we were dealing with it down there that what happens is the 18-year-olds have the parties with the 19-year-olds and the 20-year-olds. But then as soon as you're 21, you're not partying in the frat anymore. You're out of there and you're into the bars and the nightclubs because now you're old enough to go and have fun on a Saturday night. So you don't want to be around that same scene anymore. You've done it for 4 years. You know, hey, let's do something new. So we said, how many of those, you know, students that are over 21 are actually present at those parties? Well, nobody knew. And I said, you're not asking enough questions. You know, it's all very well when you arrest somebody for drinking and, you know, they're under 21. Find out why, and where, and when, and what's the reasons? Why are they doing that? You know, and the answer will come out because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah, and they got to provide that. All right, we're going to run to a quick break here before the end of the show. 865-WKPS, if anyone has any questions they'd like to chime in with. Radio Free PSU is the AOL Instant Messenger screen name. Send us a message or give us a call. We'll be right back. We're listening to Radio Free Penn State with Beryl Healy, formerly of the Campus Community Partnership Against Dangerous Drinking, on Radio Free Penn State on the line, 90.7 FM.
Programming on the line is brought to you by Eddie's Bicycles and Sport Equipment. Eddie and his family have been serving the area with nearly 30 years of customer service. Eddie's carries a full line of bikes from Giant, Gary Fisher, and LeMond. Eddie's also offers a selection of BMX bikes, parts, and accessories. Eddie's service department will perform minor repairs while you wait, while most major repairs only take one day. Eddie's Bicycles and Sport Equipment can also set you up with anything you might need for ice hockey or roller hockey. That includes sticks, skates, laces, padding, and more. Eddie's has been family-owned and operated for almost three decades. Open full-time hours to meet your full-time cycling and hockey needs. Eddie's Bicycles and Sport Equipment, located downtown on the corner of Hetzel and East College between Hooters and Subway. Also on the web at eddiesbikes.com. You looking for a place to live next year? You don't have to look any further than State College Park Apartments. State College Park Apartments are located on Blue Course Drive behind Giant Foods and are dedicated to serving your off-campus student housing needs. State College Park features four-bedroom apartments, sand volleyball courts, a swimming pool, and hot tub. In addition, State College Park is in the process of remodeling their apartments to include common area furniture, carpet tile, and a new paint job. They also have CATA bus passes available. State College Park also has free parking, game rooms, wireless Ethernet, computer labs, and an on-site fitness center to keep you in shape year-round. That's Steakhouse Park Apartments on Blue Course Drive behind Giant Foods. To view an apartment, you can contact them at 237-1600. Programming on the line is brought to you by Lions Pride. Lions Pride, offering everything Penn State for every Penn Stater for over 26 years. Lions Pride features Penn State apparel, Penn State gifts, custom sportswear, and awards. You can check out their website at lions-pride.com. Lions Pride, located on 112 East College Avenue across from Old Main. Open 9:30 to 6 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 4 on Sundays.
Do you want to try something fun that will keep you in shape? Try belly dancing. On Saturday, December 4th, Angela Prado is returning to State College to teach a four-hour workshop on drum solo choreography with a small czar section. Angela is classically trained in ballet, tap, jazz, flamenco, Middle Eastern, and Polynesian dance. Having taught and danced professionally for over 12 years, she has studied extensively with many international masters. She will inspire you with her pure Egyptian form, emotional expression, and intricate choreography. Dancers of all levels are encouraged to participate Saturday, December 4th, with registration beginning at 9:30, followed by a class at 10:15 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. Register in advance before November 20th for a discount. For more information, visit state-college-bellydance.com.
You're listening to Radio Free Penn State. Call in at 865-WKPS. That's 865-9577.
All right, folks, we're back on Radio Free Penn State right here on the line, 90.7 FM. We got about 5 minutes left on the show. We're joined today with Chris Miller, Jen Myers, and Ms. Beryl Healy, formerly of the Campus Community Partnership Against Dangerous Drinking. They just had a meeting today in the Hub. It goes to show how many people knew about that. Let's just kind of wrap things up here. We're talking about this nightclub that you were looking to erect here in State College, based primarily on the extensive experience you had in Miami doing this sort of thing as an alternative for many people under the age of 21, 18 to 21-year-olds, to have a viable nightlife alternative here in downtown State College. And the idea was shot down by many of your peers on that committee. So give us a little bit of a background to that, and two, where do you see things going?
After we sort of failed miserably with the borough because of their riot, notions, we then went out to the Colonnades in Patton Township and pitched the proposal there. It was very well received. They thought it would be great because at that time the theater had just pulled out. They were going to put a cinema in there, and they were looking for something to anchor the nightlife. I mean, primarily the cinema was going to be their anchor for the nightlife up there. This was before Wegmans had decided that they were going in as well. They were sort of one foot in the door. I got a phone call at home from the representative of the housing association up there, and I couldn't think of houses nearby, and I had this mental picture of the trailer park, but that was neither here nor there. He said to me, well, we really don't want this dance club in this area. And I said, well, why not? He said, well, because there's going to be a tremendous amount of noise at 2 o'clock when everybody leaves, and there's going to be a lot of noise and a lot of cars and a lot of noise and a lot of students and a lot of noise. I basically, he didn't want the noise. So I said, what makes you think they're going to be leaving at 2 o'clock? Well, that's when you stop serving alcohol. I said, well, no, this is going to be alcohol-free, and we'll be able to stay open until 5 or 6. I could literally hear the color drain from his face when he thought about people being able to leave at 5 or 6 in the morning. And it was just this whole mentality of, you know, we want people to come to State College. We want students here, but we don't want them to have any fun after dark, and we don't want them to sort of, you know, kick back and let loose, and we just want them to stay home and be quiet. And it's the same thing with tourists. It's like, yeah, we welcome tourists and we welcome visitors, but, oh, don't make any noise.
We want them to be seen and not heard, like a small child.
Exactly. It's so infantile. It's this whole mentality, and that sums it up in one word. It's infantile. I mean, you have to offer something. Okay, we wouldn't be able to accommodate, you know, the 40,000 students that are on campus, but we'd take care of, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 of them, and it would be, you know, somewhere as an alternative, you know, for them to go.
We got Skarik on the phone. Wants to make a real quick comment. Go ahead. Go ahead, Skarik.
Hello?
Yeah, you're live on Radio Free Penn State.
Ah, okay. Hey. Hi. What's your name, ma'am? Farrell?
Earl Healy.
Hi. I'm really sorry.
Go ahead, Skarik. You're live on Radio Free Penn State.
Can you hear me? I can hear you. Hello?
You're live on Radio Free.
I can hear you guys fine. Can you hear me? I'm not sure.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Hey, I really sorry I didn't get a chance to hear the show, but I'd really like to get in contact with you. I'd love to hear your ideas and share with you some of mine for this nightclub thing, because a group that I'm involved with, we've been throwing industrial dance parties here for 3 or 4 years now, and we've shown some degree of success in this, and we agree with you in everything that we've done, that under 21 is the way to go, and that alcohol-free is definitely an option. So
it works. I mean, the team that we have together, it's sort of the best in the business. My lighting designer is Joe Zamor. He designed the lights at Studio 54. He's been in the business that long. My laser guy is Eduardo Capriles. He does the laser show at, I would say, every NFL, NHL party. Most of the movies you see, any laser programming in the world, he owns 90% of the rights to that. He did the laser show at the Panama Canal handover for the U.S. government. He put the laser show into Crowbar in New York, Chicago. I mean, he's just amazing, the stuff he's done. Every cruise ship has his product and his programs on there, and he's a partner. He's, you know, so imagine what we can do in a club. He's got some amazing technology there that hasn't been seen. Probably it's just in one club in Vegas, and we're keeping the rest for us. We've got an amazing product to put to people, and this is what we pitched. And we said, you know, we know that, you know, you do a 44,000 square foot nightclub, you know, with a dance format, and we bring in people like, you know, Blondie and the top acts, because another one of my partners represents the world's third largest promoter. You know, this was a good product, and we said, forget the alcohol, this is the product.
Yeah, definitely. Music is definitely the product.
Hey,
and I
listen,
can tell you that a lot of the WKPS staff would definitely be behind you on that, because there's no place for us to hold shows to bring in bands and to have dance events for an all ages crowd. It's really difficult here.
This is why when we were on the beach and that they were having problems, Coconut Grove was the place to be, because that's where all the students were, and it was all the private parties. We found this theater. We actually broke through the back wall of a bakery, and we found what was in the 40s the French casino. At one time it was Al Capone's dinner club. $5 million was spent converting it from the theater that it was into the nightclub. It was huge. It was unbelievable, the amount of people. We had people coming from all over the world, and people told us for 2 years that it wouldn't work, because we were going to do one night that was alcohol free, and the alcohol free night was a huge success. People didn't care, but we never promoted it as alcohol-free. We just said it was a dance party.
Right.
We never used the word alcohol.
There you, and that's what works.
That's what made it work.
We'd love to continue this more. Maybe we'll have Miss Beryl Hilly back on the show again in another time so we can continue this discussion because, as you know, Skerrick, there's so many little facets to this that go on and on, the political, the entertainment, the promotional, and so on and so forth. But we thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, for Chris Miller, for Jen Myers, and for Ms. Beryl Hilly, we'd like to thank you very much for coming in today and talking to us. We hope to have you back again sometime and continue a lot of this further.
Pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. All right, that's going to wrap it up for Radio Free Penn State here on The Lion 90.7 FM. We'll be back tomorrow at 5 o'clock, as every weekday, 5 to 6 on The Lion. The Sports Blitz is coming up next.